This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today we're kind of continuing the series. I am right now at CD2. I've been meeting a lot of people who've been on this journey. Some people have been on it. We're really at CD2. This is the Advanced Institute. So most people have been on this journey for a while, really deep into it. And I've been loving meeting people and just having really great conversations. And there's someone who's at my table that I will now consider my friend. Her name is Jenna, and I am excited for you to meet her and for you to just hear this conversation that we have for you today. Jenna, why don't you just introduce yourself?
Hey, everybody. I'm Jenna. I'm from Arizona, and I met Chaz, on Sunday?
Yeah.
And it's been great just meeting everyone and getting to know you and hearing about your journey and what you do and how you share it with everyone else.
Yeah. So this is day 3 of CD2 of this conference. Tomorrow we actually have there's a ropes course that we have to go through. that should be fun.
Very interesting.
But let's stay in the present. And let me ask you, just tell the world a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I'm a special education parapro at a high school, and at the high school my husband works at, and it's just a blast to work together with these kids, and I love what I'm doing, and it's great fun. I also volunteer for a preschool working on conscious discipline, and I work with my family, and we work together, and we embody what conscious discipline is, and it just has become who we are.
So how long have you been practicing conscious discipline?
For several years. I was actually introduced to conscious discipline by my good friend, Bibi. Her twins are friends with my sons, and we became good friends, and we just started talking about mom stuff. Mm. And she said, here, read this book and get back to me. And I did. And I fell in love with it, and it changed my life. Mm. It became who I was as a wife. It became who I was as a mother. And then it eventually became who I was as a professional. And I just kind of take it with me wherever I go and share it with whoever is open to it and willing to try something new in a different way.
What book did she give you?
She gave me the Conscious Discipline Building Resilient Classrooms, but she said, this is the only copy I have, but look at it from a mom perspective. Mm. And I did, and it was just really cool.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, the Conscious Discipline Building Resilient Classrooms. I really love that book. That book has everything in it. Mm-hmm. It is laid out in such a beautiful way with the skills, with the powers, with the different parts of the brain. It makes it really easy to just absorb. So she gave you a book and you were like, okay, I like this. But, you know, we all start off like, okay, this sounds great. And then you go into tell me about kind of the practice of it. So you got it. You have kids of your own. What did you do then?
I sat with it and really for myself, I focused a lot on the first part of it, which is composure. And it really resonated with me that I needed to practice composure with myself and then with my children. And I was staying at home with the kids at that time. And then my husband started noticing a difference. And he was like, what are you doing differently with the kids? And I just explained to him and I said, this is what I've been working on. It's really cool. I love it. And he had seen me, you know, reading the book and things. So he kind of knew what was up. But it was just really, it just organically took hold of who I was. And I naturally did a little bit of it, but I didn't know why. And this, the book gave me really so much information as to why, what the little bit that I did do worked. Mm-hmm. And it made it deeper for me and made it, and I kind of made it my own.
Yeah.
And I took it on as a person first and a mom first. And then I began to teach my toddlers how to do this. And now my toddlers back then are now 10 and 12 and they are doing, you know, upshifting their brains when they are in conflict, using the language by themselves independently. And then now, oh my gosh, my 12-year-old, I can read it in his texts. He is texting in response to people's upset wow. with conscious discipline. And it's like the heavens have opened up and they're singing. And yeah. Like, yay, you did it. I'm so excited for him
yeah.
that he's able to have these skills and to help his friends navigate really emotional situations.
Yeah.
And it's just incredible.
How old did you say he was?
He's 12.
He's 12.
He's
okay.
12.
I, you know, a lot of times I think that that's some of the most like powerful, that's almost some of the most powerful thing, like right there, what you just said, mm-hmm. that he is now using it with his friends, with his peers.
Yes.
And I really think about that. And I even think about like my own life. Like I didn't grow up with, I wasn't raised on conscious discipline
yeah,
or any,
neither was I.
Yeah, or anything even close to it. Mm-hmm. Very much raised in a fear and shame based kind of approach. And I remember a lot of times my friends would, you know, they would struggle with emotions and things like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. And honestly, I felt really uncomfortable and I felt bad. I remember recognizing as a teen that like, I'm not a good friend because I don't know how to help my friends through all these really big things that they were going through.
Yeah.
Let alone, you know, I think thankfully, for myself, because I mean, I was going through a lot of emotions too, but I think the one thing that that helped me through my emotional struggle growing up was that I had an outlet of writing. I was very much into writing, you know, writing poetry. And so like, I remember like those emotions being stuck and I would just start, like I would start journaling and writing and then just feeling so good afterwards. And so that became my practice, not because it was something that was taught to me, but it was just something, an interest that I had. And luckily it was something that I found.
Yeah.
But it, when in terms of helping other people in their upsets and like really intense things where there's not a lot of friends who were harming themselves, and I didn't really know how to support them at all. And so for you to say that you now see your son responding in this helpful way and
yeah.
kind of knowing what to say and how knowing how to support his friends, like I think, you know, even if you do all the conscious discipline stuff, there are going to be some things that you know, your kids may not necessarily want to share with you all the time, or they might just be a thing with their friends. They just want to talk to their friends about certain things. And I think there's so much power in us teaching children, not just so that they can grow up and teach their children, but just so that they can be a support for each other all along their journey.
I 100% agree. And I think that is so powerful that kids can, I mean, because my friends are still my support
yeah.
system. And man, what a cool impact that would be if we were all equipped as teenagers
yeah.
with these skills.
Yeah.
like our worlds would be a different place.
Yeah.
And I think it's so neat that, you know, he has these skills and he's taking them to school. Both my boys do. And they take them to school and they say, wow, you're really struggling right now. How can we help navigate this situation together? Or, you know, oh, you didn't like it when I did that. You know, yeah. Next time I'm going to make some more space for you.
Mm.
And, you know, whatever the situation might be, those are just kind of off the top of my head. But yeah. It's just the language, the fact that they have the language and they understand why it's important is incredibly powerful yeah. to preteens.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that I've heard. Like, I've talked to a lot of conscious discipline people who've been doing it for years, for decades. And, you know, that's something that I hear come up a lot of mm-hmm. just like, it's so amazing to hear like the thought process and the reflection that you know, my child has. And I know that is, you know, a direct result from using conscious discipline with mm-hmm. them and supporting them in this way. Yeah. And so I think,
and it wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean,
right.
years of flaws. Are you
right.
kidding?
Right.
Everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the whole family. But man, now that we've nailed it and we know how to see the problem or to see what needs to change or be tweaked, we can fix it more quickly
yeah.
and go, you know, like, oh, geez, you know, I'm really sorry, son, that I raised my voice with you. I will never raise my voice with you again like that, or, you know, place blame for a grade on you like that.
Yeah.
And I will, you know, let's approach this a different way next time. And going back and doing that repair with those kids and now has developed a skill in them that is lasting a lifetime.
Yeah, and I think that's 100% a part of it. The oops mm-hmm. are a part of the process too.
Yeah.
And I think that we kind of have to have those oops because how else will we be able to show them how to come back from the oops? Because
absolutely.
Obviously as children, all the world being new, they're going to be making a lot of mistakes. So they need to learn how to come back from, how to repair the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you.
Yeah.
So you've been doing this for several years. We're at CD2, which means you were at CD1, and CD1's another 5-day course conference. I want to ask, what are some ahas? Or give me like maybe one or two, like share an aha that you had that just really spoke to you, that you just took with you and it just, you felt like was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
We may not be able to go through all the game changers,
sure.
but if someone listening can hear one, that might be a game changer for them.
Early in the process at CD1, my two game changer moments from CD1 were behavior or emotions or whoever, whatever is happening in front of you is not happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
That is my inner mantra constantly, mm-hmm. especially at work. Behavior happens in front of you and not to you. And then the second part of that is respond, don't react. And composure is a huge key of that.
Yeah.
And so those were my two. I took that and I ran with it and I applied it to as many places as I could. And then when I do breathe through it, I repeat those two phrases, you know, behavior happens in front of me, not to me. Respond, don't react. Respond, don't react. And then I breathe myself through that. And then I can upshift my brain and get to a higher level of thinking and problem solving.
So those two mantras are part of how you keep your composure
mm-hmm.
and how you start to self-regulate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's and we talk about mantras. We love mantras here, and so you might have just found another one. You know, the behavior happens in front of you, not to you. It's something that we have not talked about as much.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that one.
Yeah. And in CD2, it was they did an hour ago, they did this visualize your feelings in a beach ball form.
Yeah.
And so if you have this beach ball of feelings, this, you know, whatever it might be, and you have your emotions, or not, yeah, your emotions, and you're trying to push your emotions away from you, or in other words, give somebody else your beach ball, force Mr. Chaz to take my beach ball, like to save me from my emotions. And when we do that, when we push our emotions onto others and or try to find blame for why we're feeling the way we are, she was explaining that you lose control over your emotion and you lose the power to change it. And if you place that onto somebody else, it becomes their responsibility, and it's kind of you're running away from your emotions and your feelings and your thoughts or whatever you're dealing with that at that time. And then instead of doing that, she was talking about and describing sitting with your ball of emotion,
yeah,
and addressing it and looking at it and honoring it and saying, you know, it's okay to feel like this, and we just need to learn how to respond to our emotion and honor that we see and notice a physical change in us when we feel a certain way, like angry. That's an easy one. You get hot, you get all the yucky feelings, your stomach starts to hurt, all that. And if you sit with that and honor it, it creates a space in your brain to problem solve it. How do we get out of that feeling in that ball? And that's the whole concept of conscious discipline, is to honor what you're feeling, notice it, make a shift, and problem solve. And I think that is, for me, so powerful, because so often you're like, oh, I gotta get out of here, I don't feel well, like this is really uncomfortable feeling. But if you sit with it and you hold it and you examine it, you allow yourself again to be able to make change,
yeah,
in that approach, in that feeling.
Yeah. And one of the phrases that I always hear is, in conscious discipline, is whoever you put in charge of your feelings, you put in charge of you.
Mm-hmm.
And,
for sure.
And putting children in charge of our feelings is that's way too much power. I'm all for giving children power and choices and jobs, but
yeah,
the power over us is not power that they can handle and, mm-hmm, and should have. And the things break down. And if you're making me mad, then you,
yes,
can take me, then I have no control over my emotions.
Exactly.
And it's this child who has control. And for the child who does not have whose brain is still developing and stays in the lower centers of their brain often, because that, you know, the higher parts of that prefrontal is still developing, that's a lot of power to give them. And it creates a lot of turmoil amongst ourselves. They can drag us and really make us do anything. And I recorded another podcast episode, but I think it'd be great to repeat this, is that if we allow children, if we give children that power, then, you know, how do we tap into our own power?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we say all the time, you know, a child will do something, right? They will, you know, they'll poke someone, or they'll do something that we don't approve of. And, you know, we're like, why did you do that? And they're like, well, he made me do it. And then our response is like, well, no one can make you do anything. You make your own choices. And then we turn around and we say, you're going to make me put you in timeout. You're going to make me spank you. You're going to make me,
exactly,
you know, with the whole thing. What happened to, like, okay, so it's, you know, if your friend jumped off the bridge, would you do it too? We want children to hold their own power.
Mm-hmm.
But simultaneously, we are sending the message that other people are in control of our choices and our emotions, and we don't have control. That if you know, it's a traditional belief that if people just did as I say, then I could be happy, kind, and caring, as opposed to happiness is an inside job. And you know, I, you know, that is a choice. That is, it's a practice.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to say on that. One more thing too, because I think it might have been a CD1 that I went to, that a lot of times with this beach ball metaphor, I'm gonna do it with you, Jenna, but yeah, I know, sure. I don't know when else can hear it, but it's gonna help me. that's all. Dr. Becky Bailey was talking about, you know, when you a lot of times you will hold a boundary, right? The child wants a cookie, or they want to go outside, or they want, you know, they want something, right? And kind of have to hold the boundary and say that, you know, and sometimes you're going to have to say no, or you're going to have to, you know, and what a lot of times what that happens is their reaction is to say, "You never let me do this," or "You're the worst mom ever," or "I hate you." That is an example of what we're talking about, of them giving their, putting their feelings on us, giving us the beach ball. And so one of the things that she said that I remember is, I might be messing up the words, but it's that you need to expect the blowback. And so she was like, it was something like, blowback, ball back, right? You set the boundary, expect there for it to be blowback, and they're going to give you their feelings, and then you give them their ball back. You give them their feelings. And something else that was said today is that you give them their feelings back and their most compassion, with all the compassion you can. And so it's not just it's not a dismissal of their emotions. It's an acknowledgement of that, you're experiencing a lot of frustration right now. You were hoping that we would be able to go outside right now. You know, wonder you're so upset, right? And it's not just you're not just used to saying the script, because it can be really easy to get the script and just to say that, and just, you know, to kind of just in a very dismissive way with our body language, with our tone. But really, our intention matters to really be compassionate in this moment. When they give us our feelings, we very compassionately give them their ball back. Blow back, ball back. Blow back, ball back. And the ball is representing the feelings.
Yes.
So I want to, before we have to go back, because I think I hear some people coming back, are we past the time?
I don't think so. I think we're supposed to be back at 1:45, and it is now
1:44. Oh, man.
That's okay.
Okay, so
we'll make an exception, right?
I've been late almost every single time, but this is really important. This is really important. So there was a moment, because this is something that I'm going to remember for my CD2 experience, and I just want you to kind of take us through what happened yesterday, and let's talk about it.
Yeah. Yesterday was a difficult day for me. I had some very big emotions. We were in the middle of learning and engaged, and where we are at, we do not have a lot of cell phone service, and so I had some text messages coming in clumps, and I read through the first clump, no big deal. Second clump, I read it, and my blood went cold, my heart immediately started racing, my head was pounding, and my body started to shake. And I looked at my table group and I said, "You guys," and no one heard me. And I said louder, "You guys." My husband, who works at the same high school as I do, just texted that there is a gun on campus and they are on full lockdown. And my table immediately reached out to the facilitator for the presenter today or this week and said, we need to do a wish well. And I said, we need to wish well, all of us, right now. And I stood up and asked the entire group, what, like 120 of us, in the middle of my tears and my absolute emotional chaos in that moment, because I didn't know what the next cluster of text messages was going to be. And I asked for a wish well. And before CD, I would not have done that. I would have left. But I knew the people around me would support me and help me. And we all collectively placed all the fiber of our being into a message of hope and wellness and love and care and sent it through our energy to my school. And when the whole room did that, my entire body was shaking. I was so scared. I was so scared for my husband, for my students, for my community. And Chaz happened to be sitting directly next to me, and I reached out and I grabbed his arm, and I grabbed the person's arm next to me on the other side, and they held me and they all breathed with me, and we all had the same compassion and love sent to those people. And it was an incredibly powerful moment for a large group of people to create an energy for one. And I will never forget that feeling of support and understanding and empathy for me in my moment. And it's not going to come across through a podcast because you can't feel it, but it was amazing that our basic skill that we teach in composure, when I had no composure at all in that moment, I had zero skills. They left my body because I was so scared, but the only thing that I could rely on was the people around me to support me through that moment. And it was incredible. And to know that that's what we teach to our kids is, in a moment of absolute terror and fear, they can rely on the other people around them to lift them up and to hold them and to embrace your beach ball and sit with your emotion and not run from it, and to hold it up and sacred and honor it, that being scared and terrified is okay, and you can create some beauty out of it in addition. And I think that's really an amazing thing that we are trying to take out into the world. And that's why I want to scream conscious discipline from all the rooftops that I possibly can, because it is so incredibly powerful once you're willing to make a change and do it different. And yesterday will impact my life forever. And so thank you, Chaz, for supporting me through that moment and being there with me and not allowing me to run from my fear.
And, you know, I think a big theme of this kind of episode is support and how we support each other. Mm-hmm. And so I'm gonna try to dive a little bit deeper, because Honestly, yeah, that's a heavy story in itself.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, it did not end there
Yeah.
for the day. And we don't necessarily have to, you know, get super into that, but I'm going to ask you.
I think they should know it ended okay. Everyone is safe at home, and it ended the best way we could possibly hope for. So, thankfully. Anyways,
yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. Yes.
I didn't want to leave them hanging.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, no, what happened?
So, what were the things in those moments, like for you, what were the things that helped that, because I would say that there was more than one person that supported you. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I was next to you, but
yeah.
I think, you know, we wish welled.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you felt kind of in that moment, or even moments, even for the rest of the day,
mm-hmm.
where you continued kind of feeling that support? Because another thing that was said today was that, like, you know, you don't, you regulate the feelings, you don't just get rid of them, you know,
mm-hmm.
it goes, it's just not as intense, the intensity lowers,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that you're able to handle it, you're able to
yeah.
problem solve. And so, and I could feel that even once everyone was safe, and we knew that logically,
right.
that you still had that feeling
oh,
in
yeah.
your body. And
yeah.
so is there anything else that you can think of that, or that sticks out to you that just helped you feel supported? And I ask because, you know, we all have people that need support, and sometimes it's hard to know what to do
yeah.
in those moments. So
it carried that feeling, carried it kind of in waves through the day. There were some other, you know, circle up moments that were kind of brought it back out and that were difficult for me. But, you know, we breathed and we took it as it came, and that's okay. And that adrenaline kind of manifested in different ways in my body physically. And I had to move. I had to walk.
Yeah.
It was hard for me to sit down. You probably remember me like pacing in the back of the room for a little bit. And I think our group took a walk. And that really helped to get outside and feel like the sunshine.
Yeah.
And so it kind of manifests itself in different ways and waves. And then, you know, I just... thankfully, knowing conscious discipline, I knew I could recognize, like, okay, I was really in survival brain, and now I'm more in emotional brain, where it's coming in waves and coming and going, and I'm analyzing and flip-flopping back between survival, emotional. And then I got to the executive part of it and the problem-solving part, where we could talk as a group, and that's what we're doing the entire week. We are problem solving for these exact huge upsets in our life. So I kind of take that on as like this, you know, the perfect place to practice,
yeah.
first, for lack of better words, our skills. And that's, and I had people at the table like, you're going to need to move. It'll feel like this. This is where we're going to go. And, you know, why don't we walk? And suggesting how to upshift my brain. And so I really kind of took that on.
Yeah.
And just listened to people through the day. So.
Yeah. And, you know, last, we're wrapping up because we got to get back.
Yes. Yes. We're so late. Oops.
Yes. Our opportunities for learning. Oops. Our opportunities for problem solving.
Yes.
So, one thing I just want one thing audience to know that I know that you shared with me is that you and your husband were the only ones who use conscious discipline in that school.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, your husband was able to, someone felt safe enough
mm-hmm.
to go to him for yeah. support. And Amy was talking about this yesterday of just how, you know, we become the safe keeper. We become this safe person for people. We work at it. And
yeah.
sometimes we don't always see exactly what the result is going to be. And maybe even questioning, is this working? Is this helping? Is it not? and you know, it's, we don't realize how much it can be life-saving until it saves a life. And I just want to put that message out there
for sure.
Of just like this, you're going to see the impact. You're going to see some impact of it immediately. But like really the huge, the greatest impact typically comes when you're not expecting it, and a little bit down the line when you do this with consistency. And so I just wanted to end my part on this, and you can end it any other way that you want to say, and then I will push stop on this.
It's all about connection. And I mean, yesterday, if those students didn't feel connected to their teacher, my husband included, and other teachers that reported it as well, it could have ended differently that day. But those students felt connected to their teacher and safe enough, and their teacher to go to them. And I think that's the foundation that we're building here, and to create safety and connection so we can solve the huge problems.
Yes. Yes.
So that's that.
Thank you for coming on. Let's say bye on three. 1, 2, 3.
Bye.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?